Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, what's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other such related things as such. I'm one of your hosts, Alex Croce, and I'm sitting across side from my friend and compatriot, Casey Clapp.
Well, howdy, Alex. How y'all doing?
Casey, hello.
Alex, good for you. We have great accents. No one has ever said otherwise.
That's right. A big hit among the people. And of course, I'm using this accent on purpose, Casey. And today, I believe, I'm closer than I was the last time I used it.
Yes, quite closer.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree.
Do you agree that I'm dead on?
Yes.
That's what people are saying.
Huh? I would say so. However, every time I hear your accent, it always, for some reason, reminds me of a Kentucky accent.
You know what it is?
Hmm.
It's like five different Southern accents mixed together in my brain.
Exactly. It also, I can hear that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm worldly.
You are. You really are. You're Southern worldly.
Yeah. My little pocket of sunshine.
My little pocket of sunshine.
My little corner of the world. Casey, we're speaking in this way because today we're talking about a tree.
We are talking about a tree, and the tree speaks this way, so we wanted to make sure that we could communicate on the tree's level with the tree.
That's right. Of course. It sounds a little demeaning, but it's not. We're on the tree's side.
That's true. We are talking about the famous Southern live oak today.
Wow. Quercus. I know that much.
Yeah.
What's the next one?
Virginiana.
Virginiana.
That's right. Okay. Initially named after the place that we called Virginia.
Yes, who was originally named after...
Queen Victoria.
Elizabeth?
Elizabeth, the Virgin Queen.
Yes,
they made the Virginia Company. They made a colony. They called it Virginia. Therefore, the name of the tree is the tree of Virginia, the oak tree of Virginia.
There you have it. A little fun fact for you to start the show.
That's what it is.
Casey.
Oh, Alex.
Let's imagine, as we do every episode. Hey, you know what we did?
What?
We skipped our opening. I'll just say really quickly, Casey, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing great, Alex.
Okay.
I'm doing great.
Wonderful.
Everything's working out. I had a lot of fun with you this morning.
Yeah, we had a good morning. That was fun.
Good morning. Yeah, feels good. So, how are you?
I'm quite well.
That's excellent to hear.
Yeah. Let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through the landscape of Virginia.
Oh, actually, could I ask a Louisiana almost swamp, or a Georgia almost swamp on the Pacific side, or the Atlantic side. Oh, my God.
Absolutely. We can be anywhere we want with the power of imagination.
Yeah!
So we're there, and we come across some Southern live oaks. Casey, let us ID this tree.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Alex.
Yeah.
There is almost no tree in the world that has the look, the feel
of cotton,
of Spanish moss.
See, if we were doing the cottonwood, that joke would have killed.
Yeah, that would have been amazing. And everyone would have been like, yeah, what?
The look, the feel of cottonwood.
Oh, that's
cotton's motto.
Their
slogan.
Oh, man, I didn't get that. I missed that one.
I'm used to it.
Well, let's go back. The look, the feel, the smell. of an oak.
Yes.
Specifically, the forests of the southeastern United States, more, I guess I would say specifically, but also kind of like broadly speaking, the it's like they're a tree that grows along the coast, but like the southern coast by the Gulf of Mexico through Florida up probably about to Virginia, in fact.
Okay.
Up the Atlantic coast. And
a little J shape.
Oh my God, Alex. I can't speak highly enough of what this forest looks like, because the trees grow out in this way that is not tall. They don't really get massively tall. They stay really kind of short.
But
they arch over and around and just keep growing outwards.
They're real man spreaders.
Oh my God, they are, and they make room for each other. They are the definition of tree spreaders for sure.
Yeah.
And they just like have this look in this field that just is stunning. So the main thing that you see when you're walking through a forest of these is that they have a bunch of moss hanging from them.
Yeah, what is that moss? Is that beard moss?
It's Spanish moss is what it's called. And Spanish moss is this epiphytic plant. It's a tillandsia, or tillandsia. I always add like another syllable to that.
Called it epiphytic?
Yes, it's an epiphyte, but it's not an epiphyte in the way that you expect it to be an epiphyte.
Oh, wow. I was conflating that word with epithet.
Oh,
which
yeah,
is something
yeah.
very much different.
Sorry, yes. An epiphyte is a tree that grows, or a plant that grows on the outside on top of another plant.
Okay, great.
So like epidermis, same base word.
Wow, Casey.
It grows on the side of something. So if you have a plant growing on your skin, that would be an epiphyte.
That's cool. Like an ivy or a...
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Now, the thing, I guess the difference though, an ivy, like its roots are in the ground. And for mistletoe, its roots are in the tree.
Oh.
So that's a parasite. And the other one is a vine, so it's using it. But it's not, I would say it's not quite an epiphyte, because an epiphyte has its whole life and does everything up in the tree.
Got it.
But it's not actively taking nutrients from the tree. It's just the tree is the medium that this thing grows on.
Okay.
Orchids are a great example. There's a bunch of things in the same family as pineapple that also do this. In tropical places, they're all over the place.
So this Spanish moss,
yep.
This musgo española,
sí.
Is very is a quintessential. It's almost like, you know, we talked about like chloroplast.
Yeah.
Being like so old school buddies with a leaf that it becomes a part of the leaf.
Yeah, basically.
Spanish moss is like such old school buddies with the oak, particular oak, that it looks wrong without it.
It does. And it just is like such a beautiful thing. Like people call it like the sort of, everyone has these common names like old man's beard or something like
that for a
lichen that we have over here.
Uh-huh.
But this is an actual flowering plant, and it grows and just hangs down these long threads throughout all these trees.
It's spooky.
It is. It's so spooky. It's like the classic like southern swamp kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's where these trees grow. So you're walking through the swamp, you see these canes of these big, huge oak trees grow up, split out, and then just go out over the landscape. The big ancient ones, which almost every single one's been cut down, and there's some that have been replanted or grow on estates or something like that. They were planted in the middle 1700s, still kicking it today. And you get these massive, big branches that arch over. Some hit the ground again and then come back up.
Wow.
They're just the most incredible architecture you've ever seen on a tree. Wide as you've ever imagined, these big, huge, I call them canes because I imagine canes come up and kind of come back down and then back out. And that's what they do.
You
covered
know
in things.
They look a bit like, you know, when like a dam breaks and like a huge gush of water comes out.
Yeah.
And it goes whoosh, and it splashes back up.
Ah, yes.
They kind of look like a wood dam.
That is
broke.
That's a great descriptor.
And they just kind of like, oh, they let loose and they just sort of go where they please and they just really spread out and kind of, they don't,
it's perfect.
They don't seem to even care about anything else around them. They just like go for it.
Yeah. That's perfectly, yes. 100%.
They're free spirits.
They're free spirited trees. And God, they just exemplify it so well.
Let's talk about the leaf, Case.
Let's talk about it. So this is another one of those great evergreen oak trees.
Oh, wow.
Rex.
I did not know that.
Yes, it is evergreen, but its leaves don't look like an oak at all.
Hmm.
The look of it, when you see the tree, you would look at it and say, yeah, that's an oak tree. Like wow. it grows in this way that's called the live oak kind of growth pattern, where you have the tall, big, strong regal oaks of the north and like of northern Europe that have these tall trees that grow up and create these big massive canopies in the big globe thing. Mm-hmm. Oregon white oak's a great example. The bur oak, the northern red oak, the pin oak, these kinds of things are English oak. But then as you go south, you end up getting a different kind of tree. It doesn't grow as tall, but it grows really wide and they stay shorter, but then grow really long. The coast live oak in California does the same thing. A bunch of different species or subspecies in Texas and Mexico. And then as you go further over, you get this in the eastern United States. And it has this at the same time as you change in this vertical, or I guess it's more latitudinal change from oak-like leaves that have those lobes, uh-huh. whether pointed or not. The further south you go, the more those just become simple leaves.
That's really interesting.
And evergreen. I should add that too. The simpler and more evergreen as you go further south.
As you go further south. So mm-hmm. northern oaks are all going to be like lobed and deciduous.
They at least tend to be.
Sure. Yeah. Majority. We're talking majority.
Yeah, exactly. 70% or more.
That's right. really fascinating. What a quirky little characteristic.
It really is. And some of them can get like little points on them. Like you can kind of get a little tiny point on the end of a vein on the edge on the edge of the leaf. But that's about it.
What, do we know why? That's just the way it grows?
I think it's just the way it grows.
Okay.
It might be. So a lot of times, this is the theory. The reason that leaves develop in those, like they have that pinnately compound or the palmately lobed appearance
uh-huh.
is because it lets in a little bit more light further down into the tree. So the tree gets light coming from not only the outer side, but it also gets some way down in the middle. So you get more light penetrating into the canopy that allows interior leaves to also get a little bit of photosynthesis. And then wherever you get photosynthesis, it goes into the most close region. So you photosynthesize on a leaf, those sugars first go to that twig. Then they go to the branch that twig is connected to. Then it goes to the stem area where that branch is connected to. And then it goes down to the roots.
It's trickle-down photosynthesis.
Totally. That's exactly it. And every middle cell takes a little bit of it as it goes down.
See, it works, people.
Yeah, it works, everyone. Vote.
I'm being ironic.
Yes. So I think with these, like the conditions are just a little bit better. A, they can be evergreen because it's not as cold. But B, if they're evergreen, then they're constantly working all the time. So they don't necessarily need that other efficiency because they're making up for the efficiency somewhere else.
Okay.
So this is all kind of just me, you know, talking about it. I don't know if anyone's done any specific research on it. If there has been, I haven't read it. But that is, if you're thinking about trees in a holistic sense, they have energy, they have a budget, how are they going to use it, then that makes sense to me because you're investing more energy into this thing, so you don't need to invest into this.
I wouldn't have been able to put it in those words, but that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, okay.
Basically.
Perfect.
Why this would be, why more southern oaks would be evergreen.
Yeah.
Casey, like most oaks.
Yes.
Should I say all?
I think you can, depending on what you say next.
This oak has an acorn.
Yes, all of them do, just as you said.
Great.
It does. It's got a cute little acorn, actually. And the acorn is very, like, it's long and shiny. Its cup covers about half of it. And it's just a fun little, it's just a fun little acorn.
It's like black.
It is. It's really dark. Like it's like a mahogany kind of color.
Yeah,
I think.
I would maybe call it like a really dark purple.
Yeah. And then the cap is kind of really thin. Like it's not an intense cap. It's kind of like a beanie that sucks onto your head, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me. And then the leaves are kind of greenish. The twigs, of course, last forever, and they really come out. And the tree itself is used for the acorns. They're made all the time, so you get this this habitat. And famously, oak trees have a ridiculous amount of birds and insects that are on it. I was listening to a podcast the other day that my friend Kefri sent over, and that whole podcast is about how birds eat caterpillars, caterpillars eat native trees. And like, so what trees are best for caterpillars? And like on the top of it is oaks and oak kinds. And people have written in and said, oh, we should talk about like the whole ecosystem of an oak tree. It turns out there's like 10,000 caterpillars, individuals, to raise one clutch of a bird. I can't remember which bird, but a little songbird that would live.
Wow.
They need to eat 10,000 caterpillars. Then that's just one clutch for one bird. To have a whole population of one bird or multiple birds, you have to have hundreds of thousands of caterpillars growing in this area. And a big, gigantic oak like this could have thousands upon thousands of caterpillars on it that a whole team of chickadees could like put not even a dent in.
Jesus Christ.
It's crazy. And then imagine that for an entire forest of these things.
That'd be a fun topic for a Patreon episode.
Yeah, I think, well, that's a great idea,
Patreon.com/arbitrary.
But yeah, so this is, I mean, for an oak tree, it has all that you want. This big, gorgeous, capacious canopy. But then also, it adds in that extra flair of like, oh, I'm also going to continue growing bigger forever.
Yeah, okay.
And get these huge, massive canopies that just are like an umbrella that slowly, constantly gets larger and larger and larger and larger, and then gets covered in this moss that just droops it like a vertical fog. It's one of the most stunning trees you've ever seen in your life.
This is, you've raised an interesting question that I just want to briefly touch on. I don't want to get into a whole thing.
Okay, I won't make any comments. It's the best way to make sure we don't last on something for an hour.
My fingers are holding the nickel and I'm just holding it above the slot.
Yeah, right.
I like that phrase, putting a nickel in Casey.
Yeah.
Rate of growth.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that across species, it varies. Mm-hmm. Some trees are just faster, more consistent growers.
Sure, yeah.
Some trees are slower growers. Some trees grow really fast when they're young and then kind of chill out in their old age. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the Southern live oak has a fairly high consistent rate of growth? Because you said it keeps growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't some trees just kind of max out and hang out for a while?
Yeah, and that's it. It's more like they max out and they like a tree could live forever if it had the opportunity.
If it didn't have like outside influence,
exactly, all these other forces,
gravity and shit,
gravity, lightning, decay, things like that. So a quick-growing tree that just kind of tops out and dies, for whatever reason, genetically, it only grows to a certain height.
Okay.
That's just kind of in the genes of some plants.
I see.
Otherwise, it is a structural thing. They also put no effort into putting in any decay, or any decay resistance. So as soon as any decay gets in them, they just topple in a matter of years because they've lost all their structure.
The Southern live oak?
No, that's just just some trees.
Oh, okay.
The Southern live oak is one of those like a Douglas fir where it has put just the right amount of budget into just about everything.
Oh.
So it grows at a medium pace. So Douglas fir grows way faster in terms of height. It grows at a medium pace. It's not the fastest. It's not the slowest. It's growing in an area of the world that is, you know, very humid, has a lot of rain, and is very moist, like humid all the time. So the trees can like constantly grow. Sorry, it also is generally warm there. So the trees can grow at a pretty good clip throughout the year.
I see.
They're evergreen, so they're kind of constantly putting in more effort into their leaves, but less effort into, they're growing a little bit more, but they don't lose their leaves. So it's like, okay, so we gain some here, we lose some here, but they are decay resistant as hell. This is half the reason of our topic today, which is like their uses.
Oh, yes.
Historically, is because they're really decay resistant. So they have that going for them. They're oaks, so they are naturally really strong wooded, especially if they're growing slower.
Hardwood.
Exactly. Really hard, really decay resistant. So you get two things there. One, you're strong enough to grow outwards as long as you want. Two, you're very decay resistant, so you don't need to worry about decay constantly attacking you and breaking you down. And then the next thing is that they're just a long-lived tree, like well over 1,000 years.
Wow.
Some documented trees.
For real?
Yeah, and that's half the reason they do this. Like, we'll sprout if we break. We're growing in really nice, cushy conditions.
Uh-huh.
We're evergreen, so we just kind of constantly are doing a little bit at a time anytime there's good conditions. We're decay resistant, and we're just going to keep cooking at a slow, medium rate for a really long time, as opposed to other trees that may grow really fast, but then once they grow really fast, they have not put effort into these other things.
I see.
So then they fall.
So it's a good budgeter of its energy.
Exactly.
And it's just efficient overall.
And it's got a good roll of the gene dice, where it's like, I guess I'm an oak, and I have all these other attributes that go well for me. And that's why oaks are so profoundly like important trees for every ecosystem around that they exist in.
This, I would say this oak was born a winner. How about that, Casey?
That's exactly, that's it. That is it.
We have plenty more to say about the Southern live oak.
Well, we sure do.
Its uses to humans and animals alike.
That's right.
After the break, we'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons, and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning, you speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin', those people are a-walkin' around, that sun is a-shinin', and it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary.
Yes, yes.
Today, we're talking Southern Live Oak. Hold on, Casey.
Alex. Oh my God, he was reversed.
Woo, I had my headphones on backward and it just felt wrong.
Wow, welcome back.
Thank you, it's good to be back.
So, you were saying we're talking about the Southern Live Oak, eh? Quercus
yes.
Virginiana.
Quercus Virginiana.
Well, Alex, I'm glad you brought that up.
It is my job.
Yeah, good work. So, this tree is such a fascinating tree for a couple different reasons. So, one of the big things is that this tree has like shaped the United States to a certain degree.
See, this is already, I'm thinking, oh no.
I know. It yeah.
Because the shape of the United States and its foundation is a sickening tale.
Yeah, it's got its problems for sure.
Yeah. So okay.
Yeah.
Take it away.
So we have to, you know, first of course we always do say, you know, there are all these different things that have happened that are, you know, as we look back, it's atrocious and it's awful. And you think to yourself, well, like the colonization of the Americas has been an awful thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, in that is a fundamentally awful thing. However, we are here in the present looking back thinking, ah, damn it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, yeah. So, like, as we are telling this tale, we're acknowledging, yes, that is the thing, and we're going to look at it and, like, well, here's how the tree was used, and here's its part in that story.
Okay.
So, these forests, of course, were filled with people and they had been for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
How they used the live oak probably was vastly different than how the Europeans used it.
Yeah.
This story though is going to be more about how the Europeans used it and how this the world politics of the time created this weird demand for a very specific tree, and then how that like had this giant upswell and then all of a sudden just poof disappeared.
The popularity of this tree disappeared?
The demand for the tree disappeared. Which
is
very obvious. When I tell a story, I'm like, oh well, that makes total sense. But I just want to say that because this, you know, I know we a lot of times really try to hit on a lot of things, but this happens to be a colonization story.
Okay. So, well, yeah, there's your disclaimer.
There's my disclaimer. So the history.
Lean into it, huh?
Yeah. I don't want to have any preconceived notions.
Yeah.
That's this story that we're telling.
Okay.
So the live oak has that very specific form to it, which is it grows up and has, you know, a central stem, but that central stem has these other long arcing curving branches that come off of it.
Yeah.
And they are arched first up and then out and then down back to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Like the arches of the McDonald's M, if you will.
Wow, the golden arches.
The golden arches. Now, this tree, it stays pretty low because it grows in an area that constantly gets hurricanes. So staying low and having these kind of lower, big, tough branches makes it so it can withstand hurricanes way better.
It's hunkering down.
Yeah, which means it can grow to a really old age and it can maintain maintain this shape the entire time. Like, it doesn't have a big stem that comes up, breaks off, regrows, breaks off. Like, you get this one nice, well-done branch.
Can you imagine a hurricane in, like, a Pacific Northwest forest?
Oh, man. I can't really. It would be, I mean, we get our hurricane-esque things, but nothing like what they get in the Southeast.
That would be just a fucking disaster.
It would be a disaster. Like, all, I mean, most of our trees are just so tall, they just wouldn't do that unless there was a whole forest of them. A whole forest of these trees, I think, would be okay.
Okay.
But individuals, they'd probably get knocked down like poles. Not all of them, but an amount that would be pretty stunning, I bet.
Yeah.
So these trees are adapted for their environment.
Good for them.
And when the Europeans were coming over, they first were looking for resources. We talked about this a while back on one of us. It could be a Patreon episode. I can't recall. But we essentially talked about the uses of resources in European places versus in the Americas, where in Europe they were resources, but they were also things that they had around them the whole time. I think this was the use of arboriculture and how Americans now and Europeans now view and use trees.
Oh, this would have been our pedunculate oak.
Yes,
episode.
Exactly. So when they were first coming over, the Europeans were looking for resources.
Right.
Like, that was it was a high on the list.
Yeah. It was sort of their paradigm
coming
into this new place.
Precisely. And when they first started these colonies, they went over and they said, we should start a colony because we can get all these resources. One of those was the eastern white pine, that it grew straight up. It was huge. It was massive. And they could make these just massive masts on these big ships that they were building. So they would have this perfect, really strong, tall mast that was 3 or 4 feet at the base and 100 feet tall.
Wow.
They would put that on their ships. So great. That works out really nicely. Meanwhile, they also would use pitch from the pitch pine and other things. They called them naval stores. And this was a getting pitch and tar and turpentine from different species of pine trees in the New World, as they called it.
Yeah.
And this was really good. They would, you know, take it and it would fill the gaps in between the wood, and it would be what essentially makes things waterproof. So they were really important resources.
Oh, wow. Okay, so they would like use it on the bottom of the wood and like to seal it and to make it waterproof so they could sail their ships.
Precisely. That's it.
Interesting.
Now, we've talked about essentially the top ship. They would use the planks that were on top that, like, you would walk on.
Uh-huh.
Those planks would be made of, like,
the poop deck, Casey.
The poop deck. You're right. Thank you, Alex. That would have, it would be, you want it to be decay resistant wood.
Sure.
Because you needed it to be able to take these, you know, conditions of water and, you know, people walking on it, things like that.
Pretty high importance, yeah.
Yeah, pretty high importance. So those would be made with, like, bald cypress, really decay resistant wood. Different species of oaks, but the white oaks and the black oaks and the red oaks that would grow straight, like those tall ones in further New England and in the mid-Atlantic, because those would grow tall and straight in forest conditions. So if you cut those down, you got the perfect boards to plank out of that, right?
Mm.
So it's like, okay, great. So they were using the trees that were growing for certain purposes that those trees lent themselves to based on how they grow. Now, the live oak does not grow like either of those trees.
Right.
It doesn't grow tall, and it doesn't, if you cut one of those big, long, arching branches and you cut it into a straight thing, when it dries, it cracks and bends and warps a whole bunch. So I was like, well, this is completely useless to make a very tall, perfectly straight mast.
Yeah.
It's completely useless to make planks, because the planks are going to be so cattywampus, you're not even going to be able to walk on it. It's completely pointless. However,
good usage of the term cattywampus,
thank
Casey.
You.
I have to commend you on that.
I try to put it in every single one of our podcasts, and sometimes it just,
I don't think
done.
You've ever said it before.
The effort was there, Alex.
Looking for your moment.
Yeah. So the one thing that these trees did lend themselves perfectly to was the bones of the ship underneath.
The bones.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, your framework.
Exactly. So
recall. Oh, yeah. It's all fucking curvy.
And now all you got to do is take those curves that are arched up, cut them, flip them over. Now you have the rib bone of a gigantic boat.
Yes.
So that is what they would use them for.
Wow.
And they were fantastic.
I'm sure.
They essentially put all these things together. And of course, so here, like we said earlier, decay resistant. They are really strong wooded trees. They are arched in the perfect way. If you cut them and hew them into the way that you want, you can get it to fit exactly the way you want on the ship for whatever size you need, because there were thousands upon thousands of these trees on the entire west or the entire east coast of the southern United States, throughout Florida, and all the way over into like middle Texas.
Mm.
So you have a ridiculous amount of these trees. As the all of these Europeans came over, they're like, it's an inexhaustible mount of trees.
Oh, God.
But we quickly learned how to exhaust that, by the way.
Yeah, he'll exhaust anything. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
We sure will. So what they ended up doing is they made these rib bones, and they started using it, and then it kind of got a little bit famous because they could, without doing much work, like much more work. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a lot of work to cut down a tree, but you would cut the tree, and then you would plant it, or you would let the whole stump grow, and it just start regrowing again. But they would cut that, cut a bunch of them, and then make a ship. And I think it said... you had to have, I think, 680, no, I'm sorry, an estimated 160 trees for a sloop, which is a kind of boat.
Wow, hold on. Let's pause for a moment think about that ratio.
Huge number, isn't it?
680 trees to make one ship.
Yes, sorry, I messed that up. I just said for a sloop. So live oak trees required... you needed 680 for a 74-gun ship of the line, which is a ship of the line's like the brand new ship that comes out.
It's still a single ship.
It's one single ship.
680 trees.
680 live oaks. That did not include the other oaks for the planks and the mast trees that you would cut down. Those are the tall eastern white pines or other kinds of pines.
So we're talking one tree for the mast.
Yep.
And then however many for the planks.
Yeah. And then 680 for this big ship.
So probably over 700 trees for one ship.
Yeah. But specifically, the live oak took up most of those because they had the right attributes.
That is fucking haunting.
Isn't that an insane amount?
That's absurd.
For a smaller ship, only a 44-gun frigate, they needed 460 trees. And for that smallest one I said earlier, the sloop, which is kind of a very small little ship, like not big, they needed 160 trees.
I just can't even wrap my brain around that.
Right?
How? I mean, that's I think about a big ship.
Yeah.
It has lots of, you know, that skeleton down there.
Yeah.
The ribs, as you called them.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of them, but like even a big ship is like, I don't know. Like I can't even make that make sense in my brain.
That's huge.
That's absurd.
Well, let me give you an example of the ship that would have been used, and in fact, they still use this kind of stuff to build. It's one of the first ships ever made by the United States by George Washington, the USS Constitution. Have you heard of that ship?
Yeah, I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, I think it's in Boston? No, Charleston, the Charleston Navy Yard in South Carolina. So this is one of those big ships that one of the very first ones built, and this one is kind of small comparatively, but it's one of those classic like tall ships you've seen in like Pirates of the Caribbean, you know?
Yeah, it's like a what Officer and a Gentleman or like what's that Russell Crowe movie?
Oh yeah,
commander of
the I think it's just a captain. No, command. Oh, what is that, Alex? I know exactly what you're talking about.
Master and commander.
Yes, that's exactly it. And that thing, that's exactly it. What? Oh, you know what that just reminded me of?
What?
He tells a joke in that. You know the joke in that movie?
No, what's the joke?
He's in there and he's like, okay, you have two weevils. They picked them out of their bread. They have two weevils and they're like, okay, how if these two weevils were to fight, which one would you pick to win? Which one would you pick to lose? And the everyone around's like, well, I don't know, what would you do? And he's like, I would pick the lesser of the two weevils.
Oh my Lord.
Russell Crowe, captain of funny stuff.
Been listening to too much Completely Arbitrary.
I guess so. Oh man. Well, anyway, this is one of those first ships. Can we just move on, please, Alex?
That's a slow burn.
Yeah.
You know what? I like it. It's good.
Thank you. Thank you. It is. It's a good joke. It's a good joke. So this is the kind of ship that we're talking about here. And this was built in, I think, the late 1700s.
Okay, sure.
And so this is the kind of big old ship that they were doing. But this was built by the United States when the United States existed. So keep in mind, that happened after the 1777. So the ships that were being built before this were being built by other navies in the world. This would be the British Navy, for example.
Of course.
The Spanish navies. The
Armada.
Portuguese and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Portuguese weren't dealing so much with these trees because they kind of missed out on the United States or North America at this point.
Sure.
But they were still trading with other people and merchants. So you had merchants cutting down these trees and then selling them to other people. You had the English where they were trading with like Scandinavian countries.
Mm-hmm.
And those Scandinavian countries or other countries in the north of Europe were like, yeah, we're also competing with the English, the Dutch, for example. So they're like, we're just going to let the English go into these like northern Germany, you know, places, take these really tall, they called them Riga firs, which is just a Scotch pine or a Scots pine. Mm-hmm. Pinus sylvestris growing inside of the North Sea, Baltic Sea, I think.
Oh,
I think. Where's the Baltic? Anyway, they were growing up there in the north. Yeah, we've talked about this kind of section of the world multiple times.
Yeah.
So these forests had these tall trees growing in it and all these other kinds of trees. So they would be charged duties and taxes and things in order to take them through these like little ports in these Scandinavian places.
Mm.
So they were like, well, if we just stop letting them come through, then their navy suffers. So the English were like, okay, yeah, we'll take those other trees and we'll get that colony. So it became like a high priority to take these areas and this entire thing. So like the politics of the time in terms of resources,
yeah,
are half the reason the entire eastern coast of North America was colonized by England specifically. That was the resource base that led them to create their gigantic empire that they had in this time period. One of the big, big bits at the minimum.
And it all revolved around these trees.
Yeah, around these trees. There was a famous thing for the eastern white pine called the King's Broad Arrow. Have you heard of this?
The King's Broad... No, what is
yeah.
that?
The idea is that the king, or whoever the monarch was at the time, would essentially claim the tall eastern white pines
uh-huh.
on private land. So it would be like... the government of any place comes through and they say, yeah, this is your private land, of course, but that pine right there, that's mine. You can't do that. Any oh. pine of a certain size, that's royal property by decree.
Weird.
Yeah, so of course, everyone was like, nah, 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 that's my pine. So they would come over and they'd put a mark on the tree, and it was called the King's Broad Arrow, and it was like an insignia that they would slam into the tree, and that would like mark that tree as the king's tree.
They're branding these trees.
Exactly, yeah, that's it. And so people, that was
how
half the reason.
Strange.
Is that a weird like phenomenon? Can
yeah.
you even imagine that now?
Humans are so weird. We just do such weird shit.
We're weird people, and like especially back then when the monarch royalty like had like such a I can do anything I want kind
yeah.
of idea, which they probably still can. So let's just keep that in mind.
They can, yeah.
But back then it pissed everybody off, and they would make these big in the south. They would make these huge reservations of publicly owned land that would be, you cannot cut down any of these oak trees. They are for the United States Army.
What period are we talking? The same period?
Sorry, now this is after. Sorry, yeah. Fast forward. The United States has now taken over. So
okay.
yeah, hold on. We'll cut that out entirely.
It's okay.
So you had these massive, like, big armies and these navy people, right?
Mm-hmm.
The English and the Spanish got into a huge tussle. And they had this massive big fight where the English beat the Spanish in some navy battles. And like, yeah, so we can control the seas. Let's do that. And then they famously just started getting their hands on every bit of oak that they could. And there's one of our resources will be, it's essentially all of the the uses of the oak tree, like, well, when we started using them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really funny stuff, because it's like in 1784, Cumberland Island, Georgia, reported denuded as many as 300 British loyalists from Florida who were shipping live oaks to the West Indies on British ships. So in 1784, like pretty late, loyalists in Florida cut down an entire island's worth of these trees to ship back to England so that they could then have more raw material to build ships.
Wow.
So also a given that I should note, all ships at this time were made with wood. Everyone in the entire world.
Sure.
They're all wood. So if you wanted the biggest, the best, the strongest, the toughest, the most long-lasting, you're getting live oak from the east coast of North America.
Wow.
Everyone. So you had like oak pirates like stealing stuff from public land, and you had...
Oh, that's so goofy.
Yeah, it's so funny, but it's like, wow, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. And then in the this list I have shows the 1720s to the 1850s was a gigantic period of building for boats. Like everybody, all the big names in Europe, the Spanish, the French, the English, and then at this point, the United States, as soon as it became its own country,
mm-hmm.
started building their ships to an extent where it was an arms race in the literal terms of the most literal terms of the word,
yeah.
where all these powers were basically jockeying for the control of all the oceans, and each one were trying to get their hands on all these kinds of trees. So it ended up cutting down almost every single one we have.
That's so heart-wrenching.
It is, because each one of these had thousands of ships, and we're not even talking, Alex, about the commercial ships, like a merchant who just wants to take, you know, grain from here to here.
They sure.
They need a ship too. Maybe yeah. they just need a sloop though, so they only need 160 trees.
Right.
So that is
wow.
That's the level of demand, and also the level of, do we understand the impact we're having on these trees? That didn't exist. It was just like, no, go cut them down, please.
Sure.
And by please, I mean I'll kill you if you don't.
I mean, that's such a man. This fucking bums me out, Casey. I'll be honest.
I know.
Anytime we talk extensively about, like, I guess particularly colonialism, but yeah. like colonialism adjacent stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like
yeah.
these water wars. It's just such a fucking bummer.
It really is.
It's so, yeah.
It is. You look back and you're just like, I wish we didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess that's the sort of, I guess that's the benefit of looking back.
Yeah.
Hopefully
you learn from that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the case. But at the same time, you also had, everyone knew how gorgeous these trees were.
Yeah.
So you had this very, you know, you had to use them. But some people back then decided to plant these trees.
Okay.
Rather than just cut them down.
That's a start.
It's a start. I'm sorry, this is probably not going where you want it to go.
Oh no.
Most of those were like gigantic plantations.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. Now a lot of them have become parks. A lot of them are also things like, you know, these historic sites, you know, in the South.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Spanish villas and things like that.
Sure, sure.
But they represent like essentially slavery at its peak.
Yeah.
A plantation was a gigantic land that was run by a white person and white people in order to, you know, in order to make whatever they're making, all done, you know, with the manual labor of slaves.
This is interesting that you brought that up in that context, Casey, because yeah. I was planning on saying in my review, and I'll just say it now, that part of the reason I look at this tree and I get sort of a bittersweet feeling, because it is very beautiful.
Yeah.
But to me, it very aesthetically is very characteristic of a plantation. And
yeah.
I'm not talking tree plantation. I'm talking like cotton plantation.
Yeah, exactly.
Like ornamentally.
Precisely.
And
An allay.
Down the road. On the way to the master's house. I mean, like
Forrest Gump. It is, you see that yes. a bunch in Forrest Gump itself.
Yeah.
And that is like, that is the quintessential thing. And like I said, you go look at those places now and you're like, oh my God, that is stunning. Like this beautiful lay of these massive, big, like cathedral-like trees arching over with all this moss hanging from it.
Yeah.
It's super gorgeous. And you just have to be like, oh man, like this, the history of this place is sour.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think it's good to be able to recognize that something can be both like beautiful and make your stomach sick.
Yeah,
thinking about
yeah.
the context of why they're there. You know, like everything is so multifaceted in its meaning.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, with that.
with that, no, Alex, yeah, there's one last bit to this story.
Okay.
Is that in about the mid-1800s, there was a big change in how we build ships.
Aha.
And what essentially happened is there was almost, I think it was during the Civil War, where the South or the Confederacy and the United States of America, mm-hmm. they both simultaneously built these ships that didn't have or that had wood as the base of the ship,
right?
But then they just put iron over the entire thing, and they called it ironclads.
Yes.
So the ironclads became these ships where they could just throw cannonballs at each other and just ping, pang, pang,
yeah,
pang, and like it just became this like silly little game. Like very few people died because they right. just the cannonballs didn't explode; they just bounced off of these gigantic iron-sided things.
Those ships are funny. They look like metal turtles in the water.
Yeah, they do because they're so heavy. They sink so low.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which I think wasn't that sort of the progenitor to the submarine.
Another submarine that happened during the Civil War, like explicitly.
Uh-huh.
But I think it kind of was where they. But I don't know if the technology or if they were really thinking about it.
Sure.
If it was just like they were so on the cusp of new technology, where of course the next step was endless, but they hadn't maybe quite been like, we're going to do this now.
And I fucking hate war. War is so lame.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I want to be outspoken about my distaste for the subject matter today.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's extremely interesting, but I also just hate every moment.
Yeah. Well, in this case, the one positive side we might be able to take from this.
Yeah, let's do it.
And there's many negatives, so don't get me wrong, is that essentially, in 1883, Congress passed the Steel-Hulled Navy Ship Procurement Bill, which ended the United States Navy's use of live oak.
Okay.
As soon as one Navy stops using trees and uses all metal, all the navies have to do that.
Because of course.
If you're going to keep up, you better keep up.
Yeah. So this was not so much a conservation effort. This was...
Yeah, this was
a war effort.
Yeah, this is a war effort that ended up making it so that the pirates who would go onto public land, denude it of this oak tree
mm-hmm.
and sell it to the Brits, stopped entirely.
Wow.
Demand dried up on a dime.
Yeah.
And now you have these massive big trees, which as I look here in 2016, and this is, I should give you some context on this list I'm looking at. It's Live Oak Use Historic Timeline, European Colonization and Nation Building by Dr. Kim Coder, who's a professor of tree biology and healthcare at the University of Georgia. Well known in arboricultural circles.
Okay.
Dr. Kim Coder is a fantastic researcher about how trees work, like really, really well known. And is like the 2016 entry just says many large live oaks today are stump sprouts from live oaks that were harvested in the first half of the 19th century.
Wow.
So it's kind of one of those things where we gave it enough time and now they are these big, massive old trees. You're like, wow. So the history hasn't like done a changeover. The trees have just had enough time to kind of be like, wow. Here I go again, restart and regrow where they used to. So we're kind of getting another like resurgence of these trees now, and everyone thinks they're so beautiful and incredible where it's like, I guess we're going to keep them now.
It is sort of, maybe I'm just in this sort of mood today, but it is sort of sad that like the live oaks that we still have are like, you know, they're like bad memories.
Yeah.
Like in the flesh, you know,
I see,
like
yeah.
you existed at a different time. You were taken and used for evil purposes.
Yeah.
And then here you are, the same tree, right? Because it just grew out of a stump.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think I would take a positive side from that, where it's the same tree that grew out of a stump.
Uh-huh.
So it's not necessarily a memory. It's like, no, I'm still here. You guys did everything in your power to cut me down and kill me and root me out.
Sure.
Still here.
Okay. I like that positive spin.
Still coming back. So
we I think you and I are in different moods today.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah. So, but that is the history of this live oak tree. And go there today and you can see it. There's an example I put a picture of, which is a famous, famous tree. It's called the Angel Oak. It's in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm.
There's a bunch of these kinds of trees where they are some of the most massive, daunting, spreading things you've ever seen. Like a spider's worth of like branches that come out and splay. It looks like at any point the tree could get up and walk away.
Right.
They're stunning trees. So it's everything about it just blows my mind.
Can they grow here in Oregon or is it too cold?
I think it's too cold. I don't know if anyone's ever tried to grow one here.
Oh.
But there
Patreon
is...
Patreon idea.
Hey, yeah, send it our way.
Casey and Alex planted live oak.
Yeah, there is a... Yeah, that's a long form Patreon, isn't it?
You have to subscribe for 400 years for it to pay off.
We'll let you know. There's we do have in Southern Oregon a species that's called... I believe actually scientific name is Quercus wislizii.
Wislizii.
Yeah, I believe so. And that tree is a, it's called the California live oak, or the coast live oak.
Right.
And that is a, wislizii.
Wislizenii.
It's even better than I thought.
They really dropped the ball in not naming that the wizard oak.
Yeah, they really did.
What were they thinking?
So they call that the interior live oak. And then there's another one that's Quercus agrifolia, which is the coast live oak. So there's a bunch of different live oaks that grow down in Southern Oregon and Northern California that look almost exactly the same. Of course, they lack the incredible Spanish moss.
Sure.
I don't know if they get quite as big, but they do have that very same architecture and effect.
I'd like to see them.
Yeah, there's one down in the Alameda District in Portland. It's a heritage tree.
Oh.
And it's growing on a big, beautiful, it's a giant estate. It looks like a castle. But you can see it if you just go by on, I think, maybe 26th or 28th Avenue, and you can see this like incredible tree that you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's a baby. It's less than 100 years old, but it has the grandeur that you would expect already.
Wow.
It's a stunning tree.
That's great. Casey, let's get into our review of the Southern Live Oak.
Let's do it.
Here's how it works. We'll give some final thoughts on the tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey,
Alex,
as a resident expert, let's begin with you.
Let's do it. So I am just constantly stunned by these trees. I just think they're so amazing. Their history is one of like torment but they come back and they respond to it. They're strong wooded trees. Even the ones that are closely resembling and related to it that grow in Texas, in California, anywhere that you have these trees, they just create this cathedral-like effect where they grow out and over and are strong enough that you're like, I could hang monkey bars from this and just enjoy it. So I just think they have, architecturally speaking, when we did actually the specimen tree, our Return of the King episode. The Stewardia. In one of those articles, I said, see this? That is a perfect specimen tree. It was a courtyard with this big tree coming over.
It was a live oak.
That was a live oak. Yeah. Although I think it was probably the Quercus agrifolia, the coast live oak of California.
It looked like an LA.
Yeah, home. I think there's like agave growing there or something. So, but that is what these trees do. And they, when planted and taken care of in the right way, are the most stunning broadleaf trees I think I've ever seen in my life. I think they're incredible trees. I give the coast live oak a 9.6.
Holy shit.
They are stunning. And they grow so well. Like you plant them, if you give them enough water and they just survive, they will take care of themselves and they will just keep cooking. I've had people lament, like arborists and nurserymen here in town, lament that what if on 82nd Avenue, for those of you who aren't in Portland, it's like this road that used to be on the outskirts of Portland. Now it's like kind of in the center, not in the center. Geographically, it cuts a swath through the east side, and it is a two-lane road with a middle like turn lane, sidewalks right next to it. There's no bike lane. There's just sprawl-tastic, places on either side. Like, it's not a very beautiful boulevard kind of street.
It's mostly seedy motels and really good Vietnamese restaurants.
Yeah, exactly. It's got its good things, but like city planning wise, it sucks.
Yeah, it's ugly as shit.
Yeah, and it's called the Avenue of Roses.
Ew.
There are no roses on the road.
No.
It is not a pleasant place to be. Unless you're inside doing, you know, getting food, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people said, what if 50 years ago, we widened the road just enough to have a giant allay of trees growing along either side of it, and you have this huge, and they use specifically a live oak tree as an example.
Oh, yeah.
Just growing over the top of this place. What would that be like now, today?
Be a lot different.
Oh, my God. So that's, like, they're wonderful trees. They're beautiful. They're perfect. They should be planted 100 times more than they are everywhere.
At wonderful.
Least the kind that we can grow here.
9.6?
That's what I say. 9.6 for the Southern Live Oak.
Very well done, Casey.
Yes, very well done, Southern Live Oak. Now, Alex.
Yes.
How do you feel about the Southern Live Oak?
I have mixed feelings.
Okay. Walk us through your process here.
All right. Aesthetically, mm-hmm. this tree is a complete smoke show.
Yeah.
Like an all-timer. 100%. Yeah. One of the most beautiful, impressive trees we've talked about since mm-hmm. we started this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Top five, at least.
Yeah, there you go. God, ooh, what are the other four?
We don't need to get into that now.
Okay, yeah.
discussions like we had today are a little tough.
Yeah.
They just make me feel sick to my stomach. I don't know why. But that was not, and I'm electing to say that's not the tree's fault, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
Nothing we ever say. It's silly to even say that.
Yeah, but I think it's fair. It's
in the universe of completely arbitrary, sometimes we blame the tree and sometimes we blame the people.
Yeah, there you go. and we get to choose when.
Yeah.
That is not a rule.
We made up these stupid rules. We can break them. Yeah, I just feel bad for the coast, for the Southern Live Oak.
Yeah.
What a torturous history. Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
It's really hard to separate it aesthetically from the allay entering a plantation.
Yeah.
That's a big sticking point
for
me.
The big house of the plantation.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awful. However, if I'm just looking at this tree on a blank white plane,
yeah,
you know, in Photoshop, I've cut it out and I put it on a white background.
Yeah,
I cannot deny that it is an extremely impressive specimen. I'm forgetting its context completely. I'm giving the Southern Live Oak a 9.0.
A 9.0.
Yeah, I think it's well deserved. And it just has, I can't think about its context. It's so gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, however, the tree itself, whew.
That's fair. Hey, yeah. That's okay. And this is how we do it. If you did keep it in there, I'd say that's also fine.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that's good. I think it's well-deserved.
Wait, keep what in there?
The context.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Where I think either way, if you look at it with context, without context, whatever you come up with after that, I think is valid, is
okay.
What I'm saying.
Okay.
So, yeah, there you go. You know what that means, though, Alex.
Oh, Casey.
Uh-oh. Wow. Alex is
I nearly
up.
Forgot.
I know you nearly did, and I saw the piano behind you, and I was like, oh, of course. That's not the piano. That's the melodica.
To the Southern Live Oak, we induct you into the Golden Arboretum of Honor. Today, we honor you.
Talking about. Oh, what a beautiful tree.
Yeah, well deserved, Casey.
Well deserved.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
All right. What do we got today, Alex? We've been getting a lot of good questions lately, so I think this has actually been pretty hard.
Yeah, it's true. We're on a roll with people sending in really good provoking questions.
Yeah, right.
This week's question is from Nick. Nick says, hello there, my fellow tree enthusiasts. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nick.
I live in the Piedmont region of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed little clusters of evergreen leaves at the top of some deciduous trees that are visible once the, quote, regular leaves fall. They seem to be in the willow oak primarily, but of that, I'm not certain. What are these? Casey, clusters of evergreen leaves at the tops of deciduous trees?
Yeah.
Is Nick seeing things?
Nick might be seeing things, but those things could be one of two things, I think.
Wow.
So there is this strange phenomenon, and I don't really know why this happens necessarily, but on some trees, there are new shoots that come out every year, right? For whatever reason, those new shoots are not, they don't senesce in the same way.
Senesce, please yes. define.
Senesce is just falling off, where if you senesce something, it falls away.
Okay.
So like, you know, leaves senesce and it's called senescence. And then if they don't fall, it's called mertescence.
Wow.
And I think there's a T in there. Mercescence, actually. I take away the T.
Okay.
So a mercescent tree is an oak tree that doesn't lose its leaves. It just keeps all of its old leaves on, like, the whole year for whatever reason.
But a deciduous oak?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So
a mercescent deciduous oak.
Yes. And then there's also senescence is the act of being deciduous. So a deciduous tree senesces its leaves.
Come on.
You're welcome, Alex.
What are you guys doing in the tree world?
We're just like, let's add six words to what only one would actually
yeah, seriously.
Be needed for.
I guess a lot of industries
yeah,
do that.
It's always the same.
Yeah.
Well, so the senescence of some of these leaves, like basically there's these cells at the edge of where the petiole connects to the stem.
Uh-huh.
And those cells will close off when it gets cold, and then they chemically and physically kind of close this bond off, and then the leaves just kind of snap off and they fly away.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's how the tree basically shuts the gates in the tree, and it no longer gets any sustenance.
Oh, wow.
And then a lot of times it actually happens when you get a freeze where the cells in there that basically are no longer fed, they slowly start to die, but they still have some water in there. So then when it freezes, that water expands and essentially rips apart.
Right.
Like when water freezes, it expands. It gets a little bit bigger.
Uh-huh.
So it rips apart the cells. And then those leaves now have been physically ripped apart due to the frost, and then they fall off almost en masse.
What a gruesome death.
It is. It's kind of gruesome, but like in the idea of like how does this physiologically work, it's really fascinating. I was in the kind of the peninsula of Oregon, the kind of northwestern section, and we were driving through the forest, and it was the first day in November that it dropped way below 30 degrees when we camped.
Uh-huh.
And then we got back out of our truck, started driving around, and all the big leaf maples were dropping almost all their leaves at once.
Wow.
It was like the day before, there's a leaf there, there's a leaf here. And then after the freeze, it was just like a torrent of leaves falling because just that last little thing just kind of bloop, broke apart.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
It's whatever it needed.
Yeah, exactly. So for whatever reason, sometimes newer leaves on the newer shoots of plants don't do that.
Okay.
Like they just don't senesce in the same way, where they just kind of sit there and chill out and they're not doing anything. Like they've been chemically taken away, but they just don't fall away.
They don't get the biochemical memo.
I guess so. Yeah. And I don't know exactly why. Like there doesn't seem to be, in my like, you know, strict opinion, a good like evolutionary reason for
uh-huh.
this. It might just be they're growing so fast that they, when that bud is set, it doesn't have something that's there because it's like, they're just like, who cares? We don't care. Just keep grow as fast as you can.
Interesting.
You know, something like that. It also happens on new shoots really often where a new sprout comes from somewhere because the tree's stressed or it got hit by a lawnmower or something like that. It sends up a shoot. Those shoots will also keep that on, but those shoots are essentially the same as the shoots at the end of a twig. They're like this year's growth that came and grew really fast and was, you know, stimulated to grow as quickly as it could, as much as it could.
Interesting.
And they keep their leaves on.
Okay.
I don't know why. That could be what's happening.
Okay.
I've never quite seen it. I haven't looked closely on a lot of willow oaks to really like dial it in, say, yes, willow oak does this.
Yeah.
Willow oak is Quercus phellos, for those of you who are looking, phellos. However, there's another thing that this could be, which I know happens in almost all oaks. That is mistletoe.
Wow. Yes. Casey, I like this theory way more.
Yeah, okay.
That it's just another plant up there, and it's too far away and too blends in too much to realize that it's a different plant entirely.
Exactly. So that could be it, especially in oak trees. They get mistletoe like crazy.
Okay.
So all the other leaves fall. There's deciduous, but there's a mistletoe species that's growing up there. They are green sometimes just because they're like, yeah, I mean, I'll make a little bit of photosynthesis, or maybe they're just green because that's how they were, and there's no reason not to be at this point.
Yeah.
But they are parasitic plants growing up there as little tufts or balls on these oak trees.
There you go.
So those are my two guesses as to what's going on these willow oaks. Nick?
Thank you, Nick, for your question.
Yeah, there you go.
If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Join us on Instagram @arbitrarypod. Same spelling. Or support this podcast on Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month, or the Cone of the Month Club for a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist printed locally in Portland, Oregon, sent to your mailbox every month. It's a lot of fun.
It is.
And please rate and review this podcast. 5-star reviews only. Casey, we've made it to the end of another episode of Completely Arbitrary.
We sure have. What fun.
You know, I just became self-aware that sometimes I don't know what to say at the end of an episode because we've said everything we need to say.
Yeah, so we're just going to end this one here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
I'll see you later, guys. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.